Those creatures know what that means, what anything means. Wait a minute, something's happening.
Ladies and gentlemen, due to circumstances beyond our control, we are unable to continue the broadcast.
Now here's another bulletin from Washington, D.C.
Martial law prevails throughout. Ladies and gentlemen, I have a grave announcement to make.
So that we may confront this destructive adversary.
Everything wiped out. May be the last broadcast. We'll stay here to the end.
People of Earth, do not attempt to interfere with your radio communication device, for we have assumed total authority. We control your base, and we control your travel. You will relinquish control of your radio device to Mystery Playhouse.
Good evening. I've been waiting for you. I'm Dr. Morgan, your host, for the next hour in the Mystery Playhouse. Tonight, we'll hear a story entitled Lanigan versus the Ants. But first, a tale about big game hunting. Really big game. The type that makes a moose head look like a mouse head. It's the X-1 story, A Gun for Dinosaur.
In just a moment, X-1, but first, no one can deny that spring is in the air, and to prepare for the new season, NBC's Weekday brings you some timely and useful features. One is a new series with Phil and Ampy on gardening tips for both city and country dwellers. A second feature brings you hints for the best use of leisure time. And you can also bet that Joe Copeland, famous dress designer, will enlighten you on the spring fashion picture when she appears on tomorrow's show. Listen in and hear it all on NBC's Weekday tomorrow morning. And now stay tuned for X-1 on NBC.
Countdown for blast-off. X-5, 4, 3, 2, X-1, fire.
From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X-1.
Tonight's story, A Gun for Dinosaur, by L. Sprague de Camp.
Just whiskey, please. No soda.
Ice, Mr. Rivers?
Good heavens, no. I have been in America for some time, but not that long.
Well, to a fine dinosaur head.
Well, now, just a moment, Mr. Seligman. I won't take you hunting late Mesozoic dinosaur.
Why not?
How much do you weigh, about 9 stone?
130 pounds.
Yeah, I thought so. It's not heavy enough.
But your advertisement. You said safaris arranged to any time
period.
Well,
I'll take you to any period in the Cenozoic. I'll get you a shot at any entelodont or even mammoth or mastodon. They have fine heads. But I'll jolly well not take you to the Jurassic or the Cretaceous. You're just too small.
But what's my weight got to do with it?
Look here, old boy. What did you think you were going to shoot those dinosaur with?
Well, I...
Well, look over here in this case. That's my own gun, a Continental 600. That shoots a pair of Nitro Express cartridges the size of bananas. It's designed for knocking down elephant, not just wounding them, but knocking them base over apex.
Well, now, I've handled guns.
Look, I've been guiding hunting parties for over 20 years, but I've never known a man your size who could handle a 6-0-0. It knocks him over.
Well, people have killed elephant with lighter guns, even a 375.
Yes, but consider, an elephant weighs, well, let's say from 4 to 6 ton. You're planning to shoot reptiles weighing 2 to 3 times as much as an elephant. Now, I tell you, Mr. Seligman, I won't take anybody hunting dinosaur who can't handle a 6-0-0. Look, let's pour another drink and I'll tell you why. You see, I went into the partnership with the Rajah about 5 years ago. I call him that because he's the hereditary monarch of Jaunpur. It means nothing, of course. We both wanted to do a bit of hunting again. And Africa's all played out. It's too civilized now. So when we heard of Professor Prohaska's time machine at Washington University, we caught the next plane to St. Louis. The foundation administering the machine had worked out an arrangement splitting the time between scientific parties and hunters who wanted to try their luck at prehistoric game. Hunters paid through the nose, of course, to support the project. Well, it was about our fifth safari that Courtney James showed up. He's what you chaps call a playboy. He's a big bloke, handsome in a way, florid, beginning to turn to fat. He was on his fourth wife. And when he showed up at the office with a blonde, I assumed that this was the fourth Mrs. James. But he left her in the outer office and corrected my assumption.
Bunny? Oh, no, she's not my wife. My wife is in Mexico, I think, getting a divorce. But Bunny here would like to go along.
I'm sorry. We don't take ladies, not to the late Mesozoic.
If she wants to go, she'll go. She skis and flies my airplane, so why shouldn't
there she... There are enough risks at 85 million B.C. without adding to them. I'm sorry, but it's against the firm's policy.
Now, look here. I'm paying you a lot of money. I'm entitled...
You can't hire me to do anything against my best judgment. Now, if that's how you feel, get another guide.
All right, all right. But let me tell you...
Oh, it ended with my telling him to get out of the office or I'd throw him out. And I was thinking sadly of all that lovely money that James would have paid me. When in came another sahib, an August Holzinger, a slim, bald chap with glasses.
Mr. Rivers, I don't want you to think I'm here under false pretenses. I'm really not much of an outdoorsman, and I'll probably be scared to death when I see a real dinosaur.
Well, most of us are frightened at first, but it doesn't do to speak of it.
Well, you see, I've always run a grocery store till my uncle died, and, well, I've got a great deal of money now.
Uh-huh.
And I'm building a new house. I'm engaged, you know, getting married, and, well, I'm determined to hang a dinosaur head over my fireplace or die in the attempt. A ceratopsian, I think. That's the one with the big horned head and the frill over the neck, isn't it?
Well, you want to think twice about that, you know. If you put a 7-foot triceratops head into a small living room, there's apt to be no room left for anything else.
I know it's ridiculous, but I'm determined to do something big for once. Since there's no more real big game hunting, I'm going to shoot a dinosaur and hang his head over my mantle. I'll never be happy otherwise.
The Rajah and I decided to make it to the Middle Cretaceous. That's about 85 million years ago. It's the best period for dinosaur in Missouri. So we drove Holzinger into the country to let him try the 6-0-0.
It's rather heavy.
Look, you look out. There's quite a kick.
Well, couldn't you fire it prone?
Oh, not a gun that big. There's not enough give. You'd break your shoulder. All right. Take the safety off.
Like this?
Here. Take my hand. I'll help you up.
Thank you. I think I better try something smaller.
Well, he took a fancy to my Manchester 70, chambered for a 375 Magnum cartridge. That's a little light for elephant, and very definitely light for dinosaur, but we were in a hurry. And then, of course, just before we were ready to trek, James showed up and apologized for insulting me. He'd had a run-in with the girl, and he wanted to go along. And so we were off on safari. You all ready, gentlemen?
Why, yes, I suppose so.
Mr. Holzinger, you've met my partner, the Rajah of Jaunpur.
How do you do, sir?
How do you do?
Well, shall we get cracking? After you, Mr. Holzinger. Mr. James.
Thank you.
Let's get going. All set.
We'll slam the hatch and off we go.
What happens?
Nothing till the force field is built up. Ah, there she goes.
What happened to the lights?
Well, there's no current while we're in transition.
I don't feel well.
There's usually a touch of vertigo. I shouldn't worry about it.
Look, where do you shoot for? I mean, with Dinosaur. What is the best shot?
Well, you don't try for his brain, you know. They don't have any. Well, to be exact, they have a little bump about the size of a tennis ball on the top of their spines. And you're not likely to hit it when it's embedded in a 6-foot skull.
Try for the heart. They have big hearts, over 100 pounds. An exploding shell in the heart will slow them down, at least.
Oh, I see.
Why do we have to go so far for game? Why couldn't we just go back 50 years and shoot lions in Africa?
Well, the machine won't work more recently than 100,000 years ago.
Why?
Well, look, I'm no four-dimensional expert on the subject, but it has something to do with what they call time paradox. You know, if people could go back to recent times, they might do something to affect history or kill their own grandfather, you know. And there's also some kind of taboo about sending people back to the same time again. There's paradoxes. Mustn't have them.
What would happen?
I'm not sure, but the university isn't taking chances. They've got about a billion years to cover. They won't run out of eras. Hello? Here we go. Oh, cheers, eh? Well, that's done it. April 24th, 85 million years B.C. Now then, careful. Keep the safety on your gun. And don't shoot unless I give the word.
Why? Why should we have to wait for you?
Because I'm responsible for everything you do. Especially if something goes wrong. I say, Roger, open the door, will you? In this period, the time chamber materializes on top of a rocky rise. At the west, you see the arm of the Kansas Sea that reaches across Missouri and the big swamp where the sauropods live. To the east, the land slopes up to a plateau. It's good for ceratopsians. But the finest thing about the Cretaceous is the climate. It's balmy like the South Sea Islands and not so muggy as the Jurassic. Oh, we sent the time chamber back off and looked about. It was spring, with the dwarf magnolias in bloom all over. Down towards the Kansas Sea, cycads and willows grew, while the uplands were covered with screwpins and ginkgo. Yeah, well, I'm no ruddy poet, but I can appreciate a beautiful scene. Well, I was looking through the haze and sniffing the air.
I got him! I got him!
What the devil?
You see it? There it goes!
Confound it, you idiot! I told you not to shoot without word from me. And what happened?
An ornithomine wandered out of the copse. Mr. James gave him both barrels, missed.
Now, look here, James. One of the biggest dangers on a safari is trigger-happy sahibs who get panicky. You're not to shoot unless you're told, you understand?
Who do you think you are to tell me when to shoot my own game?
Now, look here. Firstly, if you shoot off all your ammunition before the trip is over, your gun won't be available in case of a pinch. And secondly, if you empty both barrels, what would happen if a big theropod should charge before you could reload? And finally, it's not sporting to shoot everything in sight, is that clear?
All right.
Well, now then, first task is fresh meat. As I told you, Holzinger wanted a ceratopsian head. James insisted on a tyrannosaur. Then everybody would think that he'd shot the most dangerous game. Well, the fact is that tyrannosaur's overrated. But everybody's read about the tyrant lizard and, well, he does have the biggest head of the theropods. Oh, and he'll snap you up if he gets the chance, no fear. Well, we started off searching for meat. The Raja and I put the sahibs in front. Yeah, we tell them it's so that they'll get the first shot, which is true, but another reason is that they're always tripping and falling with their guns cocked, and if the guy were in front, he'd get shot.
Shh! Boneheads.
Where?
See? Crouching over there. Feeding on those cycads. He's about the size of a man.
They look intelligent.
Well, not likely. That bulge on the head is solid bone. Now then, hold on there, James. You've had your shot for the day. Hold your fire until Holzinger shoots.
Yeah, sure.
All right, go ahead, Mr. Holzinger.
Doesn't matter which one.
No, here. Try that one by the rock. There's a good clear shot. Well, take your safety off.
Oh.
Go ahead now.
Well?
Shh.
Ah, nuts. I've had enough of this.
James, don't...
I got him clean right through the heart. First shot. How's that?
I thought you were going to give Holzinger the first crack. It's his turn.
Well, I waited. Took so long, I thought he'd gotten buck fever.
Very well. But if this sort of thing happens once more, we leave you at camp the next time we go out. The next couple of days, we trekked around the neighborhood and then headed over to the sauropod swamp, over to the west. We were staked out along the edge of the lake, watching a big beggar out in the swamp waving his head about. And they're the big ones. It looks something like the brontosaur.
Can't we shoot him?
I wouldn't.
Why not?
Well, there's no point to it, and it's not sporting. Look, if you kill one in the water, he sinks and can't be recovered. And if you kill one on land, well, the only trophy is that little head on the top of that long neck. You can't bring that whole beast back because he weighs 30 tons or more.
That museum in New York got one.
Oh, yes. Well, they sent a party of 48 to the early Cretaceous with a 50-caliber machine gun. They spent two solid months hacking and sawing the carcass apart and hauling it to the time machine. I know the chap on the project, and he still has nightmares in which he smells decomposed dinosaur. And they also had to kill a dozen big sauropods who came in for the party. And then they had them lying around, too. They lost three men.
Reggie! Duck Bill!
Where are they?
Up there at the shoreline. Now, keep your voices down. You see? With a crest on the back of their heads.
Mr. Rivers, I've been thinking over what you said about those heads. If I could get one of those duck bills, I'd be satisfied. It'd look big enough over my mantle, wouldn't it?
I'm sure of it, old boy. Well, let's be off. Roger, you wait here with Mr. James. Shouldn't take us long. Holt and I crept along the shoreline, narrowing the range to the duckbills.
I think I can make the shot from here. I'll be ready in a minute. My shoe is loose.
He's getting away. I won't get a shot.
I'm afraid Mr. James has fired both barrels again.
James, that's the second time you spoiled my shots. I ought
Don't
to...
Don't be a fool. I couldn't let them wander into camp stamping everything flat.
There was no danger of that. You can see that the water is deep offshore. It's just that our trigger-happy Mr. James can't see any animal without shooting.
And if it did get close, all you have to do is to throw a stick of firewood at it. They're perfectly harmless.
Well, how was I to know?
I believe I mentioned it.
Well, what are we on this miserable trip for, except to shoot things?
There are certain rules, you know.
You call yourselves hunters. I'm the only one who is hitting anything.
Now, just a moment, old man. You're behaving like a confounded skite with more money than brains. I should never have brought you along.
Well, that's how you feel. Give me some food and I'll go back to the base by myself.
Now, don't be a bigger ass than you can help. That's quite impossible.
All right, I'll go alone. I wouldn't want to pollute your air with my presence.
Yeah, that's an attractive thought, Reggie, but we can't let him go. He'll get lost or starve. All right, I'll go after him.
We stumbled along for several more days. James on his good behavior for a change. And on the 1st of May, we broke camp and headed north to the hills. It was hot and sticky. And we were soon panting and sweating like horses when I picked up the smell of carrion and heard the thrumming of the flies. We found a huge ceratopsian lying dead in a little hollow on the edge of the copse. He must have weighed 6 or 8 tons alive.
Why couldn't I have gotten him before he died? That would have made a darn fine head.
Look, on your toes, chaps. The sauropod that's been at this carcass is probably nearby.
How do you know?
We see how the hide's been ripped off and the bones are scattered. Sauropods will hang around a carcass like this for weeks, gorging and then sleeping their meals off for days at a time.
What do we do?
Well, that's what we came after. Look, Roger, you take Mr. James through that way, and we'll parallel you 40 feet distant. Now keep your eyes open. It'll be hard to see in these woods unless you're right on top of him. We pushed through the edge of the copse, looking for the huge flesh-eater who'd been at the carcass. I could hear James and the Rajah pushing ahead on my right. We were separated by a gully when I heard a noise ahead on our left.
What is it?
I don't know. Take the safety off your gun.
Oh, there it is. It's one of those boneheads.
Oh, well, they're not dangerous at any rate. But be careful. That sauropod might still be around.
I've got him! Got him clean!
Well, he's done it again. He shot the bonehead.
I've got him!
Look out!
Titanosaur! tyrannosaur heaved his head out of the shrubbery just in front of us. Look, the scientists can insist that Rex is bigger than Trionkes, but I'll swear that this tyrannosaur was bigger than any Rex ever hatched. It must have stood 20 feet high and been 50 feet long. I could see its big, bright eye and 6-inch teeth. He'd been sleeping off his last meal, and James fired off both barrels over his head at the bonehead and woke the tyrannosaur up.
Get back! Get back, you fool!
His gun's empty, and Roger can't get a shot. Found it. There goes the beast in behind those ferns. Holtzinger! Holtzinger! Come back! Your gun's too light for that beggar! James came bolting back in a panic and blundered into the Raja, sending both of them sprawling under the ferns. The tyrannosaur came after them to snap them up. Holtzinger began to blaze away. He got off 3 shots through the beast's body with that little light gun. The tyrannosaur whirled around to see what was stinging it. The jaws came open and the head swung around and down again. Holtzinger got off 1 more shot and tried to leap to one side. The tyrannosaur continued its lunge and caught him in its jaws as he fell.
Reggie! Reggie!
Stand clear!
Hart! Hart's the only chance!
It's no use! There he goes!
Try a long shot!
Ah, no, I missed him clean. Poor Holtzinger.
Well, that's the end. He stopped screaming. Did you notice?
Oh, yes. Well, I expect we'd best track the beast. He might be dying. We should try to recover Holtzinger's remains.
Yes, there's nothing else to do.
No, nothing. It's a bad show all around. An hour later, we gave up and went back to the glade looking very dismal.
Where have you two been?
We were occupied. The late Mr. Holtzinger. Remember?
You shouldn't have gone off and left me. None of those things might have come along. Isn't it bad enough to lose 100 through your stupidity?
What?
Sure, you put us in front of you, so if anybody gets eaten, it's one of us. That's...
You stinking little swine. If you hadn't been a first-class idiot and blown those 2 barrels again, this never would have happened. Holtzinger died trying to save your worthless life. And I wish he'd failed.
Well, I ought to.
Now then, my lady buck, I'm glad you did that. It gives me a chance I've been waiting for. Now get up. And I'll be glad to finish off.
You won't finish anybody off. All right, put your hands up. Both of you.
Put that gun away. Don't be an idiot.
I won't let anybody do that to me.
You can't get away with murder.
Why not? Won't be much left of you after you're hit with a 600 explosive shell. Nobody could prove anything. They can't hold you for a murder 85 million years old. The statute of limitations, you know.
Nice work, Roger, old chap.
Yes. Cretaceous rock. Doesn't quite have the balance of a cricket ball, but it's a bit harder. What?
Well, suppose we tie this chap up and... take him back to camp. When the time transition chamber finally arrived, we fell over one another getting into it. We dumped James in a corner and threw the switches.
You two should have killed me back there.
Why? You don't have a particularly good head.
You wouldn't look at all well over a mantle.
You can laugh. But I'll get you someday.
Well, close quarters, isn't it?
Someday I'll find a way. I'll find a way and I'll get off scot-free, too.
My dear chap, if there was some way to do it, I'd have you charged with Holtzinger's murder. Look, you'd best let well enough alone.
No, no, I'll kill you. Both of you. Somehow.
Cigarette, Roger.
Thanks.
When we came out in the present, we handed him his empty gun, and off he went. We paid everybody off, found that we were broke. But quite luckily, a steel manufacturer turned up who wanted a mastodon head for his den. While we were standing in the laboratory at the university waiting for the time chamber, the technician, he's a He's a bookish chap, a theoretical, a temporal physicist, was watching his dials and scopes.
Oh, by the way, Mr. Rivers, you just missed him.
Hmm? Missed who?
That last client of yours, Mr. James.
Well, that's good luck. What was he doing here?
Oh, he told me quite a tale. Said he'd lost his wallet back there. Said it contained some very valuable papers. Ah. It must have been valuable. He paid the university fee of $5,000 for the use of the chamber. He's on his way back there now.
Back where?
Well, he told me to send him back a few minutes before you arrived the last time. Then he could see himself drop the wallet.
He's going to stand there and watch himself come out? Yeah, but, doesn't that create what you chaps call a paradox? What happens when a man tries to occupy the same time twice?
No, we don't know. It's never been tried before. Well, we tried to warn him, but he insisted.
Yes, I know. He's a headstrong chap. Still, you wouldn't think he'd chance it just for the sake of a wallet. Was he armed?
Yes. He had a 375 Express.
375? Well, that's odd. He knows it's too light for dinosaurs.
Yes, but not too light for a man. I say, Roger, you don't think Mr. James is lurking behind a bush back there until we show up again and planning to pot us as we step out?
That's impossible. We already did step out of the chamber and nothing happened.
Yeah, but that was before Mr. James was waiting with an express rifle cocked. Hey, Doctor?
What, you mean he's planning to murder the two of you?
Oh, I wouldn't be a bit surprised. I don't suppose there's anything you could do to stop the process now.
No, it's too late. The chamber's in transition now. Look, hadn't you better get out of here before he kills you?
Well, there's no point in running. If Mr. James's theory is right, we've both been dead for 85 million years. We might as well wait and see what happens.
Transition point coming up.
Well, it's been quite a world up to this point. Hey, Roger?
Yes, quite.
Here it goes.
Reggie, are you all right?
I seem to be. What happened?
The time chamber. It's back. We'd better get it open.
Good Lord, look at that.
Ghastly, isn't it? Where did it come from?
I'm not sure. I rather think it came from the Middle Cretaceous era. Wasn't here a moment ago.
Ghastly mess. Looks as if every bone was pulverized and every blood vessel burst.
I dare say. But that's his gun, all right. It's James, there's no doubt of it. So, that's the story, Mr. Seligman. Of course, I don't understand the mathematics, but the idea's rather easy to grasp. Nobody had shot us when we first emerged on the 24th of April, 85 million BC. And so, of course, that couldn't be changed. The instant James started to do anything that would make a paradox, the space-time forces snapped him forward and ripped him to bits. Well, they know a good deal about that now, and there's a safety margin of 500 years between each trip. You can't have paradoxes, you know. It just isn't done. And you see, I'm a lot more careful now. I shouldn't have taken James when I knew what a spoiled, unstable sort he was. Or Holzinger either, when I saw that he was too small to shoot a dinosaur gun. With a heavier gun, he'd probably have knocked the Tyrannosaur down and saved his own life. So, Mr. Seligman, that's why I won't take you to that period to hunt. I'm sorry, but you're just too light. You're not big enough to handle a gun for dinosaur.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features the story of a man who develops a spaceship that travels so fast that its pilots vanish mysteriously into thin air. Read the Vaughn Shelton story, Point of Departure, in Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand now. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you A Gun for Dinosaur, a story from the pages of Galaxy, written by L. Sprague DeCamp, patent consultant and one of our leading authors of science fiction.
It was adapted for radio by Ernest Kenoy. Featured in the cast were Alastair Duncan, Wendell Holmes, John Gibson, Donald Buca, Warren Parker, and Alan Hewitt. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.
Well, now we know why all the dinosaurs are extinct, don't we? I guess it proves that man is the most dangerous predator of all time. I'll be back in a moment with tonight's second story. So don't go away. Are you still with us? Good. Because our next story focuses on a smaller creature. You know, even the smallest creatures can be terrorizing in larger numbers. So let us begin our escape in the story Lanigan versus the Ant.
Suspense, which is usually heard at this hour on Thursday nights, is taking its customary summer holiday. Suspense returns to the air 4 weeks from tonight on Thursday, September 1st.
You are isolated on a remote plantation in the crawling Amazon jungle, and an immense army of ravenous ants is closing in on you. Swarming in to eat you alive. A deadly black army from which there is no escape.
We offer you Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure. Tonight, we escape to the Amazon jungle and to a creeping, crawling terror, as Carl Stevenson told it in his famous story, Leiningen versus the Ants.
I first met Leiningen while performing my duties as district commissioner. As my boat neared his plantation landing, I saw him upon the riverbank, regarding me with mild interest. A great hulk of a man with bristling gray hair, bulky nose, and pale eyes. His entire appearance somehow suggested an aging and shabby eagle. He escorted me to the terrace and had a drink brought. I came quickly to the point of my visit and issued my warning. Leiningen puffed placidly at a huge cigar as he listened, and then said,
"Exactly what are you trying to tell me?"
"I'm trying to tell you that unless they alter their course, and there's no reason why they should, they'll reach your plantation in 2 days at the latest."
"Well, Commissioner, it was decent of you paddling all this way just to give me the tip."
"Tip?
You're pulling my leg, of course, when you say I've got to get out."
"Now, look, I assure you, I'm not..."
"Commissioner, even a herd of crocodiles couldn't drive me from this plantation of mine."
"Oh, you don't understand. These aren't creatures you can fight. They're an elemental force, a gigantic catastrophe. 10 miles long, 2 miles wide. Ants, nothing but ants. And each one as big as your thumb, and each of them a fiend from hell. Unless you clear out at once, there'll be nothing left of you but a skeleton, picked as clean as your own plantation will be."
"I'm not going to run for it, Commissioner, just because trouble's on the way."
"But it isn't trouble, it's...
"And don't think I'm the kind of fathead who tries to beat off lightning with my fists either. I've got a better weapon, Commissioner. Intelligence.
With me, the brain isn't just a second appendix. I know what it's there for.
Can't I make you understand the hideous...
I think it is you who do not understand. In the 3 years I've been here, I've met and defeated more than one catastrophe. Flood and drought, a plague. Events which caused many of my neighbors to flee for their lives. No, Commissioner, all my life I've lived by one motto. The human brain needs only to become fully aware of its power to conquer even the elements.
Leinenschen, your obstinacy is endangering not only your own life, but the lives of your 400 workers and their families. You don't know these ants. I tell you, you don't know these ants. But Leinenschen merely sat there, puffing at his cigar and regarding me with a sardonic grin. And I knew it was hopeless. As I boarded my launch and cast off, I turned to look once more at this man who calmly intended to defy one of the world's greatest scourges. I felt a sudden resentment toward him, and yet, with it was something else. I had never met a man like that. And I couldn't help wondering what combination of elements made up such a creature.
I stood on the bank of the river watching the commissioner's launch until it rounded a bend and was lost to sight. There was a strange look in the commissioner's eyes as he stood on deck staring back at me. Clearly, he thought me, at the very least, unreasonable. Well, he wouldn't have been the first to think so. But I, Leinenschen, knew my own powers. I was sure of myself. I knew that intelligence directed right always makes man the master of his fate. That night, I called my Indian workers together in front of the plantation house. I saw their faces go ashen with terror as I told them the ants were coming. Watched them as they milled around, muttering. I said nothing more to them. Finally, one of the men stepped forward. Blast, the foreman.
Patron, we have worked hard here for these 3 years, all of us. We have built the finest plantation in this district. We all share in it. It has been a home for all of us and our families. Now the ants come.
So?
Those ditches we dug last year, the pipe we put in the ground, that was for the ants?
That was for the ants.
If we moved our families across the river, the ants could not reach them.
That's right. And you?
The ants are mighty. We know what they can do. All of us think that you are mighty.
Hey, here, Patron!
Patron, we will stay and fight against the ants with you.
I knew the men would give me that answer. I'd counted on it. Suddenly, I thought of the commissioner and wondered what he'd say at such unquestioning confidence. Would he still think I was, unreasonable?
All that night, I could not get Leinenschen out of my mind. One man who calmly evaluated his chances against a deadly menace, coolly decided that he could win, and was willing to stake his life on it, to risk a horrible death for it. It was terrifying, and yet it was fascinating. When dawn came, I sent for my assistant. Together we went to the huge map of the district which hung from a wall of my office.
The last reported position of the ants came in last night. They were, here, about 70 miles above this fork in the river.
Traveling southeast?
Yes, sir.
Directly toward Leinenschen.
Toward whom, sir?
Oh, that plantation at the bend in the river. Belonged to a man named Leinenschen.
Oh.
When would you say the ants will reach there?
Why, I don't know, sir. I imagine about tomorrow noon.
Tomorrow noon? Still time.
Still time? Now, what do you mean, sir?
Oh, nothing. Never mind. What did I mean? Still time for what? A Leinenschen to flee, or still time for me to... Even as I rejected the thought with horror, I knew that the fascination of that man was more than I could resist. That Leinenschen's fight was drawing my mind, drawing me back toward that plantation and death. I knew, past all doubt, that I was going back to Leinenschen's plantation. I had to. In the morning when I rounded the bend and saw Leinenschen's plantation before me. I put in at the dock and tied up the launch, and then I saw him standing on the bank above me. Arms folded, stubby cigar in his mouth, and that same sardonic grin on his face. I made my way up to him.
Back for another warning, Commissioner?
No.
Oh, back to stay a while?
Yes. Ah. You don't seem very surprised.
I'm not.
You expected me?
I knew you'd be back. Come along, we'll get some horses. You'll want to ride around the plantation and take a look at the defenses I've rigged up.
Yes, yes, I want to see the defenses.
And the ants. We'll be getting a glimpse of them before long, I should think.
Yes, and the ants.
Come along, then.
The defenses Linogen had devised were quite impressive. Surrounding three sides of the plantation like a huge horseshoe was a ditch 12 feet wide. The ends of this horseshoe-shaped ditch ran into the river, which formed the fourth side of the plantation. And at the upriver entrance to the ditch, Linogen had constructed a dam by which river water could be diverted into the ditch. A large hand wheel controlled the floodgate of the dam. And apparently, Linogen had ordered it opened immediately after my arrival. For as we now approached the ditch and rode along it, I could see that it was nearly full.
Well, how do you like my first line of defense, Commissioner?
Well, it's reassuring. Like a moat around a castle.
Unless the ants know how to build rafts, they won't reach the plantation. But this is only the outer moat. There's a better one than this. Come along. We'll go up to the high ground where the buildings are. We can get a view from there.
Linogen.
Huh?
I didn't see any women or children around the plantation. Or any animals.
That's right. Move them across the river.
Oh. And you think there is danger?
Oh, not because of danger, Commissioner. A matter of efficiency.
Efficiency?
Cuts down the efficiency of the men if they're worried about their families. Critical situations only become crises when oxen or women get excited.
I might have known.
Eh?
Nothing.
Here we are.
See the ditch? It's much smaller than the other.
You've noticed how all the buildings are on this piece of high ground. This inner ditch surrounds them, and it's lined with concrete.
But even filled with water, this is no barrier. It's not big enough. Why, if the ants get this far, they'll
get no farther. This ditch wasn't built for water, Commissioner. See the pipes leading into it? See those storage tanks on the hill? Petrol. We can throw up a wall of flame. Care to bet they won't like that?
Linogen, look! Over the edge of the jungle, all those animals.
Huh, running like the wind. Everything from jaguars to monkeys.
Good heavens.
Remember, they don't have any ditches.
And there's no escape.
They'll be all right as long as they don't get caught between the river and the ants. They can outrun the crawlers. But if they get trapped, it's either the ants or the crocodiles.
No.
Look. Look over there on the horizon. There are your ants. Look at them.
It was a sight I'll never forget. Over the range of hills, as far as I could see, crept a darkening hem, ever longer and broader, until the shadows spread across the entire slope and then downward. Downward, uncannily swift. And all the green herbage on the entire slope was being mown as by a giant sickle, leaving only the vast moving shadow extending, deepening, and always moving nearer.
Oh, they're a hideous lot.
Linogen, we can't last against that. Look at them. Why, they could fill your ditches with their corpses and still have enough to destroy every one of us. We've got to run.
Well, No, they haven't reached us yet, and they never will.
The hostile army was approaching in perfect formation. No human battalions, however well drilled, could ever hope to rival the precision of that advance. Along a front that moved forward as uniformly as a straight line, the ants drew nearer and nearer to the water ditch. As they approached, two outlying wings of the army detached themselves from the main body and started marching along the sides of the ditch, no doubt expecting at some point to find a crossing. And during this hour-long flanking movement, the main army remained still. Across the scant 12 feet of ditch, I stared at them. And they stared back at me. A solid mass, every one as big as my thumb, with a reddish-black body and long legs. Suddenly, a sound so unearthly as to freeze our blood jerked our heads in the direction of the jungle on the far side of the ditch. Coming toward the ditch at a stumbling gallop was a singular being, a writhing, animal-like, blackened statue, with a shapeless head and four quivering feet. It was a stag, covered over and over with ants. Linogen threw up his rifle. And the stag fell lifeless to the ground. Its agonies at an end. Horrified as I was, my curiosity impelled me to glance at my watch. I had to know how long the ants would take. After 6 minutes, only the white, polished bones of the stag remained. I could see a change in Linogen. Gone was the sporting zest of the novel contest.
In its place was a cold, violent purpose. To send these vermin back to the hell where they belong. If he did not, we were both only too sure of the alternative. And now we even knew how long it would take the ants. An immense flood of ants, about 100 yards in width, commenced pouring in a glimmering black cataract down the far slope into the water-filled ditch. Thousands drowned instantly. But the rest began using the bodies as bridges. Leininger immediately swung into action.
Anayo!
Patron!
Get to the dam. Open the floodgate more. Get the water in the ditch moving faster.
Si, senor.
Oh, look at them drown by the thousands.
Yes, but they keep coming. Even though the current carries many of them away, they're advancing.
We'll fix them. Blast!
Senor!
How about those shovels and petrol sprinklers? Have you passed them out to the men?
It has been done.
Then get all hands here in a hurry. This looks like the spot for action. Commissioner.
Yes?
Beginning to see what I was talking about?
What do you mean?
About intelligence being more than a match for anything it tackles. Take the ants. They've got no intelligence. If they had, they'd have attacked along the whole length of the ditch instead of a narrow front like this. They'd have been across by now. Too bad for them. I'm not running their campaign.
You can joke about it like that with the ants halfway across the ditch.
All right, men. Busy with the shovels now. Dump some sand and clods on them. See how they like that? And you with the petrol sprinkler, start pumping. They don't like it, Commissioner. They don't like it a bit. Look at them.
Yes, but look at the ones on the far side of the ditch. Whole clumps of them rolling into the water. The rest are using them for bridges.
What's keeping Tanea? He should be at the dam by now.
They're getting across. More of them.
Oh, grab a shovel, Commissioner. Make him regret it. What's the matter?
Grab up the shovel. Get on my arm.
Into the petrol, Liz. Douse your paws in the petrol. Keep at it. Keep at it. You're lost if you stop now. The water's moving faster.
And I'll get the floodgates open.
Yeah. Look at the ants. They can't hold their own against the current now. They're being washed away. Look at them, Commissioner. The water's carrying them away. We beat them. We've won out.
It was true. Leiningen had won. The opening round. The floodgates were left open to force Tall any night crossing. When dawn came, the dark blanket was still there, motionless across the ditch. Then we noticed the feverish activity on the other side of the plantation. Here, a grove of tamarind trees lined the far end of the ditch, and every tree swarmed with the crawling insects. But instead of eating the leaves, they were merely gnawing through the stems, so that a thick green shower fell steadily to the ground.
Blast. Have all the petrol pumps brought? Get everyone over here except the lookouts on the other side, then pass out the shovels.
Si, senor.
Looks like I underestimated them when I said they didn't have intelligence.
What do you mean?
I said if they wanted to get across, they'd have to have rafts. And that's just what they've got. Those leaves are their rafts.
Even as he spoke, the leaves went tumbling down the far bank by the thousands. The current drew them away from the bank, and each leaf was crawling with ants.
Don't worry, Commissioner. I've still got a trick up my sleeve.
The water!
The ditch is drying up. Of course it's drying up. That's the plan. Those are the orders I sent to the dam.
Are you mad? As soon as it's empty, what's to prevent the ants from... Look, the water's way down. It's almost dry. They'll be able to come across the bottom.
They'll not make it if the man at the dam carries out his orders. He should have opened the gates again by now.
To flood the ants?
Right.
Oh, what a chance to take. If anything should happen, don't you...
Here it comes. Here comes the water. Now we'll give the crawlers in the ditch a good ride. Out into the river. There. Look at them go.
Leiningen's tactics were successful. At first, the violent flow of water at the original depth raced through the ditch, overwhelming leaves and ants and sweeping them along. Three times the ditch was empty. Three times the ants raced across its bottom. And three times the rushing water, arriving just in time, carried them away. But the fourth time, the level dropped nearly to the bottom of the ditch. We waited in vain for the rushing waters, and then...
Senor! Senor!
What's the matter? What's gone wrong at the dam?
The ants! The ants, senor! Just as the man at the dam lowered the water almost to the bottom, the ants attacked. Before he could open the floodgate, he was almost surrounded. He ran. The ants kept coming. They are across the ditch, senor.
Leiningen stood, motionless, absorbing the news of his defeat without a word. Then, simply, he raised his pistol and fired three shots into the air. The prearranged signal for all men to retreat. instantly to the second line of defense. The concrete ditch is more than a mile from the point of invasion. Soon after we arrived there, the natives commenced straggling in, silently. Leiningen waited until all of them had gathered. Then he spoke to them.
Well, lads, we won the first round and lost the second. But we'll smash the crawlers yet. Anyone who thinks otherwise can draw his pay and push off. There are rafts enough on the river and plenty of time still to reach them.
I see Petrus.
You stay then?
I see Petrus.
Good. Thank you, lads. And you, Commissioner?
I can't persuade you to go up the fight, huh?
You cannot.
Then I stay too.
I knew you wouldn't.
Senor, a few of the ants have reached the ditch.
They're trying to get across?
No.
I didn't think they would. There's plenty of food over there for them. My fields, my orchards, my work of 3 years. Ha, ought to last them until morning anyway.
Yes, we were safe for the moment. But the next morning, the black swarm was solid around us. Their shock troops were hard at work. They were dropping shreds of bark and twigs and leaves into the petrol-filled ditches, forming a floating bridge across the surface of the liquid. Leiningen stood silently watching this operation, and I could see a grudging admiration in his face. Then, after several hours, the attack came. Down the ditch they poured, millions of them, and across the bridge of twigs, rapidly approached the inner side. Leiningen sat motionless, watching them. Leiningen, for the love of God, don't sit there like a statue. They'll be on us in a moment.
Let them fill the ditch first. Now, all right, everyone back from the ditch. Glass, hand me the torch. Now we'll see how our friends like a little heat around them.
The flames from the ditch shot into the air, devouring ants by the millions. It was some time before the petrol burned down to the bed of the ditch. And when it did, the devils came back for more. Again and again, Leiningen fired the ditch to destroy them. But as they returned to the assault time after time, a slow, sickening horror crept into my mind. I looked quickly at Leiningen and then at the petrol tanks. He read my gaze, nodded slowly.
That's right, Commissioner. We could hold them up forever if our supply of petrol was unlimited, but it isn't. We've only got enough to fill the ditch once more.
Leiningen, isn't there a way? Any way at all?
There must be. Yes, there must be a way. Yes. Yes, yes.
What is it?
We'll flood the whole plantation.
Flood, but how?
The river's higher than any point except this high ground we're on now. If the river was dammed all the way, it'd overflow that stone breakwater and flood the whole plantation. We've got to close the floodgate at the dam. That'll do it.
You're mad. The dam is more than a mile away. A mile of ants. It's impossible. You'll never get there, let alone get back.
That's where you're wrong, Commissioner. I'll get there and I'll get back. Ha, ha. Take care of things while I'm gone, eh?
I watched him as he calmly pulled on high leather boots, drew gauntlets over his hands and stuffed the spaces between breeches and boots, gauntlets and arms, with petrol-soaked rags. He shielded his eyes with close-fitting mosquito goggles and plugged his nostrils and ears with cotton. Then the natives drenched his clothes with petrol. Bloss, who acted as doctor to the men, smeared a salve over him. And finally, Leiningen was ready. And he stood surveying the course he must take to the dam. I sensed a sudden calm.
As I stood near the ditch ready for the run, I realized this was as it should be. I, Leiningen, would meet the ants and defeat them. Or be defeated by them. Leiningen versus the ants. Yes, it was right that it should be like this. But now there was no more time for thought, only action. I took a deep breath, then bounded across the ditch and among the ants. I ran in long, equal strides with one thought, one sensation in my being. I must get through. Dodged all trees and shrubs. Except for the split seconds my soles touched the ground, the ants would have no opportunity to light on me. I ran on. I was halfway to the dam before I felt ants under my clothes and a few on my face. I struck at them mechanically, scarcely conscious of their bite. The dam drew toward me slowly. The distance grew less. Less. Finally, only 100 yards away. 50. Then I was there. I gripped the ant-covered wheel. Hardly had I seized it when a horde of ants flowed over my hands and arms. I strained. Slowly the wheel turned. Turned more.
floodgate was swinging slowly shut. And then it was shut. And the water was rising behind the breakwater, closer to the top. Closer. Then it was spilling over. The flooding of the plantation had begun. I let go of the wheel. Started back through the ants. For the first time I realized I was coated from head to foot with the fumes. Tongues of fire stabbed me as they bit into my flesh. I almost lost my head with the pain as I ran, knocking ants from my body, brushing them from my bloody face. And then one bit me just below the rim of my goggles. Managed to tear it away. The agony of the bite and its venom drilled into the eye nerves. I saw now through circles of fire into a milky mist. I was almost blinded, but I knew that if I tripped and fell, I ran on, my heart pounding as if it would burst, blood roaring in my ears, a giant's fist battering my lungs. Then I could see dimly that wall of flame at the ditch. Oh, but it was too far away. I couldn't last half that distance. I stumbled. I fell. I felt myself being swarmed over, devoured. Tried to rise. A great weight. And suddenly the vision of the half-devoured stag in my brain. 6 minutes, then nothing but bones. I couldn't let that happen to me. I couldn't die like that. To my feet. My feet. I dragged myself forward. Toward the flame. The ditch. Spring of flame. Closer now. Only a little farther. 10 steps. 8.
We had waited for hours, when all at once, through the blazing ring around us, an apparition hurtled and fell full length on the ground. It was Leiningen, alive with ants, unconscious, with glazing eyes and lacerated face. We rushed to him, stripped off his clothes, and tore at the ants that covered him. His body seemed almost one open wound. In one place, I could see a white bone. Later, as the curtain of flame lowered, I looked out where that blanket of ants had been and saw only a vast expanse of water covering the entire plantation and working its way to within a few feet of the concrete ditch. The ants were gone, drowned, and Leiningen had won. He lay on his bed, his body swathed from head to foot with bandages, but alive and still in command.
Everything in order?
Everything's in order.
I told you I'd come back. Even if I am a bit streamlined.
He grinned, shut his eyes. He slept.
Escape was directed this week by Richard Sandville, and tonight brought you Leiningen versus the Ants by Carl Stevenson, adapted for radio by Robert Reif, with Tudor Owen as Leiningen and Gerald Moore as the Commissioner. Music conducted by Wilbur Hatch. Next week,
you are standing at the doorway of the cabin on Cashier Creek. Up on the ridge, the bloodhounds have caught your scent. And between you and a fortune, between you and escape, yawn the white jaws of a deadly snake, a cottonmouth moccasin.
Next week, we escape with Irvin S. Cobb's ironic story, Snake Doctor. Be with us next week at this same time when once again we offer you Escape. Ethelbert, Anne, and Casey will be along in a few moments with tonight's crime photographer drama entitled Sellout. All year long, Casey, crime photographer, has been one of radio's top rating shows. You're sure to enjoy the proceedings coming up over most of these same CBS stations. Chip Corning speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Well, that story was certainly no picnic, was it? Good thing we've got pesticides to protect us from insect invasion. Or is it just a false sense of security? After all, insects do become immune. I'm Dr. Morgan. Join me next week, if you can.
Control of your radio device to you until next week.
No.